Our mental state becomes often the reason for our success or our failure. The mental health of circus artists, though, is that what makes them thrive. If they can keep calm, show psychological resilience to stress, and work hard to practice perfection, it helps build a safe environment for creativity and supportive talent development. I'm Katerina Badzaiki, and in today's Infinitely Curious program, we will discuss how Yorgos Karagiannis can keep a ball on his head while walking in the metro, running on his rollerblades, and crawling with his shorts in the snow. Yorgos is a professional juggler who has studied the art of circus and performing arts in Montpellier, Paris, and Montreal, and is probably one of the few in the world who is specialized in juggling the ball on the head like no other. Yorgos, hello and welcome to the program.
Hello. Thank you very much for having me.
What does it take to keep the ball on your head without falling? Is that mental skills, goal setting, meditation?
For the ball on my head is mainly a lot of practice. You need a lot of repetition, staying a lot of time with the ball on my head. And you need to be very, very patient, very calm and keep going on this work.
What made you decide to have this as your profession?
I was a porter, a base in partner acrobatics, and I was doing this the first 4 years. I was in school, and then I had to change the discipline, actually, because I didn't have a partner to work anymore. And then that's how I started juggling, and later I found out about the ball on the head also.
Why the ball on the head, and why didn't you specialize in other sort of disciplines, circus disciplines?
So in the beginning, I was working with other persons, and I liked that. But it was complicated to have someone every time to work. So after I wanted to try something that I don't require to have other people to work on. So juggling is very good for this. And you can practice anywhere without having a training space also. So with the ball in the head, I really liked how practical it was. I could do it like anywhere and anytime. So that was what I really enjoyed about the ball in the head. It gave me a lot of freedom.
How difficult is it to keep a ball on someone's head?
It's very long. It's easier to do it while in front of a mirror, so you can see where the ball like, goes and try to balance it like that. So that was the first stage I was doing it, and then you have to spend a lot of time in front of the mirror trying to understand where the ball goes, and after you need to practice it out of the mirror, so you can't see the ball, but you have to feel it on your head, which takes time to be able to have that sensibility on the head to understand where the ball goes.
So we saw you walking with a ball on your head in the metro station with rollerblades, but what really impressed me was when you were crawling with the ball on your head in the snow. And I understand this is Montreal, right? And it's very, very cold.
Yeah.
And you were only wearing your bathing suit or boxer shorts. Is this part of a training process? And how do you prepare your body to achieve such levels of perfection?
It is, actually. I started doing cold showers years ago, and it's something I really enjoy doing. It has a lot of benefits, both physically and mentally. So it's something I practice every day, like every time I have a shower, I'm doing a cold shower, and something I really enjoy doing, and I do it every time. So it's something I practice. And mentally is a very big important factor for performing also, when you perform in front of a lot of people, and you need to remove the stress and be able to be very concentrated. À ceux qui n'en ont pas, à ceux qui n'en ont pas, Rosa, Rosa, quand on fout le bordel, tu nettoies, et toi, Albert, quand on trinque, tu ramasses les verres, Céline, Bater, toi, tu te prends des vestes au vestiaire, Arlette, arrête. Toi la fête, tu la passes aux toilettes. Si on célébrait ceux qui ne célèbrent pas, pour une fois j'aimerais lever mon verre à ceux qui n'en ont pas, à ceux qui n'en ont pas. Crois les bonnes manières, pourquoi je ferais semblant, toute façon les payer pour le faire. Tu te prends pour ma mère, une heure je reviens, que ce soit propre, qu'on puisse y manger par terre. Trois heures que j'attends, franchement, il est fabrique ou quoi? Heureusement que c'est que deux verres, appelle-moi ton responsable. Et fais vite, elle pourrait se finir comme ça, ta carrière.
Oui, célébrons ceux qui ne célèbrent pas. Encore une fois, j'aimerais lever mon verre à ceux qui n'en ont pas. À ceux qui n'en ont pas. À ceux qui n'en ont pas. Frotter, frotter, mieux vaut ne pas si. Frotter, frotter, si tu ne me connais pas. Brosser, brosser, tu pourras toujours te. Brosser, brosser, si tu ne me respectes pas. Oui, célébrons ceux qui ne célèbrent pas. Encore une fois, j'aimerais lever mon verre à ceux qui n'en ont pas. À ceux qui n'en ont pas.
What is your fear when it comes to being a professional juggler?
Yeah, there's, for a professional juggler, there's always the fear of dropping. It's something every juggler hates about when the stick doesn't work and then drop. That means like it drops. Like when, for example, the ball in the head, when the ball can't stay in my head and drops. So that's always a big fear of a juggler. But there are ways to see it like an artistic opportunity that gives a drop that can change something and give it, so you have the ability to give another impression to the audience. So it can be a mistake, but if you play it right, it's not a mistake and it's an opportunity to give something different.
Can you describe a moment in a show where you were very much afraid this would not go very well, and how did you deal with that stress?
Yeah, and when I perform, I use the improvisation, so I don't really know what I'm going to do after. So that can be stressful, and with the adrenaline of the audience and everything. But you need to have a clear mind so you can make the right decision and see where you can go from there. And that's something I do often. I don't have a specific act, I don't do specific things, but I leave it more open so I can improvise and see how I feel the moment. There is a moment that things don't go very well, and you're starting failing what you're doing, and then the audience can be silent, can be awkward, but then you need to find something and bring that back in the good state. It's a difficult process, but it takes a while also. Like I'm not very experienced in performing. I'm more new kind of. So I would say that's getting better and better.
Where do you perform? Do you perform in the circus, or do you also perform in the streets?
I've performed in the street, I've performed for circus also. For now, I work on my own, so I can get contracts and do a performance for a specific event.
Do you have friends, artists, who actually perform in the streets and they make a living out of it while performing in the streets?
Yeah, I have.
How is that?
Sometimes it's challenging to find work in circus. Like, especially in the winter here in Montreal, it's more difficult. But in the summer, there are a lot of festivals and there are a lot of things you can find, you can do, so easier in the summer for working than in the winter.
No, I mean with passerbys, people passing by and leaving money, or, you know, when you are in a corner of a street. And did you ever do that?
Yeah, I've done that, yeah. Then on the metro and on the street also.
What was that like?
It's a very interesting experience. People like watching that. What they were not expecting, and they're very happy to see something different. And so that's something I like doing, and gives me joy and to see the people, the actions, they're happy and they like that.
Tell us something that, you know, strikes your mind that really stayed with you as a memory.
There are people that they relate the ball with football, because they like football, so they want to play football with me and something like that, and it's funny.
How easy or difficult is it for circus people to thrive and make a professional career in circus, in both Canada and Greece, of course?
In Greece, I don't know exactly. I haven't lived a lot there to work. I haven't worked in Greece. But in Canada, in Montreal, we're very lucky that it's a very circus city. So there is a lot of circus here. There is the circus school, there is the Cirque du Soleil, and there are a lot of circus companies. So in Montreal, it's maybe the best city to be for circus. So we like it for this year.
Can you tell us a little bit about the training process? How were you trained?
We're starting in the morning, like normally 8:30 or 9 o'clock in the morning. And we had a lot of classes to do. We had the practical physical classes, and we have the theoretical classes. So we had classes like anatomy and philosophy, and things like that. So that was challenging because we have to be in the school for a lot of hours and do different classes. Not everything is equally interesting to you, so it was a big challenge.
What kind of challenge?
To keep your energy and focus to do so many different things at one day in school, and it's very demanding also, so it demands you do your best every time.
What did your teacher tell you when you were at the school? What was most important for him in order for you to be a good performer?
The teacher, they're very demanding in school, and they want you to do your best, so they're very focused on of discipline and hard working, so you work every day and you give everything you can, and it's important to find your artistic identity also, which is not always to find, and that's stressful because you're doing something, you have your technique, but then it depends on you, how you show to the people what you want to express. And I would say that was one of the biggest challenges in school, to find your artistic identity and something that inspires you and you really identify yourself with that. For me, that was a challenge because I wasn't exactly in the beginning, so I had to change my discipline. And when I found the ball in the head, it was an important thing for me because I felt like I found my identity. I found something that I'm really enjoying doing, and I see myself doing that my whole life.
Why?
Because the ball in the head needs a lot of discipline and balance, and I like having this in my life, the balance and searching for the balance and the imbalances and everything.
Does this come also with meditation?
Yes, meditation can help a lot for to have a clear mind and being able to relax and deal with the pressure and the stress. So meditation is an important part, yeah.
Formidable, formidable. Tu étais formidable, j'étais formidable. Nous étions formidables. Formidable. Tu étais formidable, j'étais formidable. Nous étions formidables. Oh bébé, oups mademoiselle, je vais pas vous draguer. Promis juré, je suis célibataire depuis hier, putain. Je peux pas faire d'enfant et bon, c'est pas, hé, reviens, 5 minutes quoi. Je t'ai pas insulté, je suis poli, courtois et un peu fort bourré. Mais pour les mecs comme moi, ça fait autre chose à faire, hein. M'auriez vu hier, j'étais formidable. Formidable. Tu étais formidable, j'étais formidable. Nous étions formidables. Formidable. Tu étais formidable, j'étais formidable. Nous étions formidables. Oh, tu t'es regardé, tu te crois beau parce que tu t'es marié. Mais c'est qu'un anneau, mec, t'emballe pas. Elle va te larguer comme elles le font chaque fois. Et puis l'autre fille, tu lui en as parlé. Si tu veux, je lui dis, comme ça c'est réglé. Et au petit aussi, enfin si vous en avez. Attends 3 ans, 7 ans et là vous verrez si c'est formidable. Formidable. Tu étais formidable, j'étais formidable. Nous étions formidables. Formidable. Tu étais formidable, j'étais formidable. Étions formidables. Hé hey, petite, un pardon petit. Tu sais dans la vie, y'a ni méchant ni gentil.
Si maman est chiante, c'est qu'elle a peur d'être mamie. Si papa trompe maman, c'est parce que maman vieillit. Tiens, pourquoi t'es tout rouge? Bah reviens, gamin. Et qu'est-ce que vous avez tous à me regarder comme un singe, vous? Ah oui, vous êtes sains, vous. Bande de macaques, donnez-moi un bébé singe. Il sera formidable. Formidable. Tu étais formidable, j'étais formidable. Nous étions formidables. Formidable. Tu étais formidable, j'étais formidable. Nous étions formidables.
Are there any artists that when they come to a certain age, their body doesn't help them anymore and they just give up?
Yeah, it depends what you do also. There are some disciplines in circus that are very physical and very demanding for the body, so that would be challenging to do it in an older age. But in circus, you control what you're doing, so if you're older and you don't have the same abilities that you have younger, you can adapt and doing less technique and, for example, you can use more theater, you can do more, use more clown, be more funny, and use less techniques so that it's not so demanding for your body. So I would say it's something you can do it forever, for your whole life. You just need to adapt and keep working on your body and your health to be able to do it.
So there's no way someone at the age of 55, I don't know, 60, or even more, they'll tell you, sorry, you're old now, we need someone younger, so you can go.
No, I wouldn't say so. Especially for what I'm doing, I use a theater and clown, so even with an older age, I will have more experience, so I'm going to be better in interacting with the audience. So I think I'll be better performing when I'll be older. So.
Can you think of a story of a performance you did and of an incident, whether that was in the street or in the circus, which was mind-blowing?
Most life-changing thing for me, I would say, was the first time I saw a street circus show. I was in Greece. I was starting doing some juggling. I wasn't doing circus then. And I remember watching that show, and I was two people doing it hand-to-hand. So it was one person doing a handstand in another person's hands. And I remember it was a life-changing experience for me. I was so excited and so impressed by that, but all I wanted to do after that was just doing circus. So that's something it affected my life a lot.
Jorgo, I hope we can all learn to thrive like you do by not necessarily keeping a ball on our heads, but our brain in our heads, which we don't usually do, and learn from your experiences to practice patience, concentration and resilience. Jorgo, thank you for taking the time to speak to us, and I wish you a very nice day in Montreal.
Thank you very much. Have a nice day.
And that was circus juggler Yorgos Karagiannis speaking to our Infinitely Curious program.
I'm leaving home tomorrow with a light of day where the wind will take me. Don't you ask for my name. Don't you wait for me no more. Gather on people and say goodbye to the one you won't see. Visiting fields and mountains in white, while the grass on the ground is a pillow at night. I'm leaving the city, the noise and the cry, for places where I can hold my head high. I'm leaving home tomorrow with a light of day, while the wind Don't you ask for my name. Don't you work for me no more.
The thermometer shows minus 10 degrees and it's 6 in the evening. Angelos Kyprianos unfolds his chair and unzips a guitar from its case along with a bottleneck, capo and thumb pick. Everything is ready to unfold his own songs to passerbys. His stage is not the Mediterranean South, but a corner in the streets of freezing Berlin. While playing his guitar, Angelos is burning with fever, but continues to play to raise money to fly to a friend to help him recover. Finding a place to sleep is always a challenge for a busker. Angelos does not do it for money, nor because he's homeless, but for the sensation of freedom, he says. He has slept in mountains, benches, rivers in summer and winter time with his band and on his own, meeting people on his way and usually with the police breathing down his neck. COVID has changed his busking plans. I met him in Athens one evening in February in dim light as power had not come yet in his new fantasy books and games store, where he now writes his own fantasy books. I began by asking Angelos why is busking so important to him.
Busking has been a huge part of my life. It was the first time I actually discovered that I can survive by playing music on the street and thus not by doing a job that I don't like. And so it was the first sign that I can actually pursue autonomy in a creative way that, you know, I don't feel dead inside. And so busking was the first sign of freedom for me, when I realized I can do something on my own without needing anyone else, and acquiring a way to travel around the world, make money on the road. And that is a great feeling for someone that cannot do it otherwise.
But I know very well you're not doing it for the money. When traveling around Europe with your guitar, is money an ongoing concern? Because I know the way you travel is you basically do not start with any money. You go there, you play your guitar, and the money you earn helps you to go further. Is that right?
Yes, it's more or less right. I mean, money is always a concern, and you never stop thinking about it when you're an artist. That is the cold truth, unless you don't need it. But regular people need it, so yes, money is always on your mind, and it's not only that you are concerned about how to make money, but your mind works in a way that you try to figure out the best possible scenarios and the least expensive stuff and the least expensive routes and how to combine accommodation, food, and tickets for the whole journey. So yes, you do it for the freedom, you do it for the art, and you do it for the experience, but you have to be able to do it. And whenever you go through days that you don't have any money at all, it's very miserable. It's very bad. And it's a bad feeling to not be able to have the basic stuff on the road, especially when you're far away from your own place. So there's a red alert going on in the back of your head at all times.
Could you describe a journey of yours with busking?
Well, sure.
Where did you start?
Yeah,
did you go? Which cities? And
well, I've tried many combinations. And of course, if you do this for many years like I do, at some point you develop some favorite places and you visit them again and again, because busking is also a routine after some point. So you have your favorite spots when you more or less know how much money you'll make, and then you have to go there again, and then you combine this place with another place and see how easy to go from one place to another place.
Okay, so give me an example.
Yeah, most of the times I start from Italy because I like the process of taking a boat and sailing to Italy, and then from there I have to figure out if I go towards, I don't know, like Spain, or if I take a plane and go to the Netherlands. Most of the times I first go to Italy, and from there I decide the rest of the route. And usually I end up towards the east. because I,
for example,
I prefer countries like the Czech Republic. I prefer to go to Germany or Slovakia, Slovenia, stuff like that, because I don't, it's easier for buskers. Poland.
Why? Why is it easier?
Well, there are some places. Most of the places in Europe have tourism all year long. Okay, but there are some friendlier places in terms of busking and regulations, and we could always find our way around some places like Austria, the Czech Republic, and you know where to get the license, you know where to play. It's much cheaper than other places. I mean, if you go to Paris, it's a nice place to walk around, and you can imagine yourself playing music there, but in reality it's a very expensive place. It's not so easy to play music. It's the, and of course England is the worst, actually,
really?
For me. Yes, because the distances are too long. You need a metro to go anywhere. It's very expensive, so it's not easy. You need places you can walk around. You can play in different spots. You've got people walking by the thousands, you know, stuff like that.
And people, of course, who are offered, who are prepared to pay and give money. Because
yes.
I understand some countries give more money than in other countries.
Yes, generally, yes. But this is very difficult to actually calculate, because even in the same town, even in the same neighborhood, you can have completely different results from one corner to another. If we play music outside the street and then we play on the street, you know, like 5 minutes away, it's a different thing. So you don't need to change countries or even cities. All you need is to change just a few meters sometimes.
I grew up in a house right across the sea. I didn't like the priest and he didn't like me. I better run, 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 run. My mama told me, boy, before you be a man, there's plenty of things you gotta understand. Never get in trouble, never touch a gun. Always run for cover, always try to run. That's right, run. Run, run, run. Where I lay my head, I really are. Oh no. I watch my friends growing into men, too high cause life throughout their mind. But a girl, young and sweet, she turned my life around and gave me everything. But I just run, 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 run. I travel through sea, there ain't much left that I need to see. My whole damn life I live for free. Thanks to my only philosophy, I always run, 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 run. Oh, how I miss my home, right across the sea. And if I lose my way, there's no place I'd rather be. No other place will send me free.
The most poignant moments on the road are often those when an unexpected obstacle or fear is encountered and overcome.
Yes.
In basking, how many of those obstacles have you encountered and overcome?
I believe all of them. I don't know which. I mean, from finding a place to sleep, we've slept in mountains, benches, rivers, not only in the summer. So anywhere, me and my band, or when I travel alone, of course in the boat, airports, we spend days and days sleeping in airports. So yes, sleeping is a very crucial part when it comes to basking. Food is okay. I mean, you can always find food, so that's not a really important problem. Random encounters, like people that cause problems, I don't know, drunk people, people that want trouble, all of these people somehow are attracted to baskers. I don't know why. They always approach us and start any type of trouble. Of course, the police is usually enemy number one for music on the street. It's always a pain to...
What do they do?
Well, it can start very basic with show me your license, and then you can have the discussion about licenses, and maybe there are licenses that you can acquire. Maybe they are not for tourists, which is the case in many places. Maybe it's not for someone that just visits for a few days. Maybe, I don't know, maybe someone complained for the noise. But when you see a policeman and you play music on the street, it's always an easy way to ruin your day. You have to be very diplomatic, you have to be very patient, and, I don't know, 70% you will not figure it out.
Describe an experience where you were really put in a very difficult situation. I know one, but I want you to say it.
Oh, I'll choose, I don't know, a random one, I guess. In our most recent journey in Austria, we met a lot of nice people on the road, and we stayed there for a few days in Innsbruck, which is a lovely town near the Alps. And although it was August, it was extremely cold in the evening, okay? Maybe colder than it is right now here in February. Anyways, so we met some lovely people, and a girl we met agreed to let us stay in her place. So we were like a huge band, like 7 people. So, and each one of us has an instrument, so we take up a lot of space. And so, yes, we went to her place, and we stayed for a day, and then we were supposed to stay for a few more days. And in the second day, 2 of our bandmates had their birthday at the same day. So we want to celebrate, nothing fancy, just sit around the table and eat and listen to some music. That's it. No partying, nothing like that going on. And then the owner of the house, who lived underneath us downstairs, he used his key, which apparently was okay to do in Austria, while we were inside, and he opened the door and he saw people. And you're not supposed to invite people without a permit. I mean, you cannot even invite your mother to come to the place that you rent as an individual.
Not even for one night?
Nope. You have to, you know, agree with them. And so, example, so if you rent a place, which for us in Greece, it's...
Inconceivable.
Yeah, of course. But so... long story short, he just kicked us out, and it was raining like hell, and it was very cold, and we had instruments. It was like 1 o'clock in the evening in Austria, which is a dead place. There's nothing going on. There's nothing, no way to move around. And so we had to walk to a mountain carrying everything in the rain and sleep under a shelter or something. And while sleeping, freezing, of course, we woke up on the sound of a weird person that wanted to attack us.
What?
And so we had to actually split between guardsmen, you know, so we had to figure it out, you know.
What do you mean he wanted to attack you to steal, to rob you? Or?
He wanted to attack us to take the spot because it was the only shelter, actually. But he wasn't in the mood of conversation, like sharing the place. And he was very weird and very hostile. He was a really big guy, and anyways, but the moment he saw we're like a bunch of people there, he left. But after that, we had to actually make, you know,
change guards.
Yep, stuff like that. So this is quite common. This is quite common.
And also remember once you told me a story where you actually were playing the guitar,
yeah,
and you caught fever, and you had like a 40...
Oh, yes, that was not a simple fever. That was a, how do you call it, a salmonella. I had eaten something very bad. So extremely high fever, and then that wasn't the only painful symptom. I had terrible pains everywhere, and other symptoms that I will not disclose here because they're disgusting. And I had to share a room with like 7 people. It was very uncomfortable. Of course, you had to share bathrooms and everything. So when you're sick, this is a major problem. And then I had to play music in minus 10 degrees in the snow in Berlin to raise at least 100 euros to take a plane to another destination. So it took me some days to do that, and I almost died. I mean, that was like 12 years
ago. You almost died?
Yeah, that was like 12 years ago. So if I wasn't 25, I was 25 back then, I think I wouldn't have survived that. Because I was very young and very resilient, but it wouldn't have happened otherwise. And so I managed to take a plane to England and visit a friend, and I stayed there, and she kind of, you know, treated me. And I recovered, because I didn't even have money for medicine or something.
He woke up on a wall. It's heavy fall. Some put us down away, but he doesn't plan to obey. 'Cause his mind's made up, you train for that. That's the only thing he'll say. 'Cause he's blind, you see, all his hatred failed. Now his world has gone astray. Son, save your soul. Son, save your soul. You've been wrong for so long.
A risk-free trip, yeah. Risks being a lifeless one.
No, I wouldn't say that. That sounds too bohemian. I think, you know, every year I used to do that. I stopped during the COVID era, and I haven't done that since, but I guess I'll do it again sometime. Every time you do it again, you are a bit more prepared, of course, and you do it better and better. So, of course, it's always better to plan ahead. You don't have to figure everything out, but, you know, it's only wise to have some backup, to know some places, to know some friends, just the necessary stuff, unless you have no choice. I would only suggest you do that completely, like, free plan, if there's no alternatives. If you are between not doing it at all and doing it with a lot of risks, I would suggest the latter. Just do it with a lot of risks involved. But if you can do it with fewer risks, of course it's a wise thing to do.
Mm-hmm. I understand there is a high risk when you're doing it, like the way you're doing it. And you keep on doing it, is that right? You haven't given up, have you?
Of course not.
So when was the last time you basked in Europe?
Just before the COVID era. I just haven't done it since, because of the whole regulations and stuff. We just couldn't bother with the whole thing. Now that it kind of fades away, I have to find my musicians again, you know, because during the COVID era, everyone like split. They went to their villages. Some people just stayed there. So I kind of lost my band and the people that, you know, and you kind of lose your sense of direction. So we have to figure it out again, plan some stuff and just do it again at some point. I don't know when, but it's inevitable. It's going to happen.
Where?
I would like to do something different, to be honest. I mean, I've been around Europe like a million times. I've not seen it all, of course, because it's huge. But there's a lot of similarities that you just encounter from one place to another. So I would really like to try something like, I don't know, the USA or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a much more difficult trip, and you need to plan some stuff, and you need a lot of more money. So it's not so easy, but it would be a great challenge.
Any interesting or fascinating people you have met on the way?
Many. I couldn't even name them. There's a lot of people. There's some people that really appear as guardian angels, just appear out of nowhere, and they're so kind and hospitable and good that they stay with you for a day or 10 days or something like that, and it's a unique experience, and then you might never see them again, but it's something really unique, and it happens many times. It's not the exception.
And what do you learn from them?
I don't know. It's not what you learn, it's how you feel about it. You feel a great sense of... I mean, when someone treats you very well for no reason at all, there's something that happens to you, you know. You are like forced to drop your guard for a while and think like, okay, this should happen more often and you should do it more often as well, because otherwise it will never happen. And, you know, we always have our guards up because stuff happens and you become tougher and tougher. But there are so many people that have made their lives so much easier out of the kindness of their hearts. We have to always remember that.
We eventually learn that along with our passports and backpacks, our flawed and imperfected selves come with us wherever we go. Is this kind of psychology ever more present when you take that leap with yourself in the basking culture?
Well, when you travel alone especially, which is actually my favorite mode of traveling. I mean, it's beautiful to travel with friends and bandmates, of course. But there's something else when traveling alone, because you go through everything in such a different intensity. There's different volumes. So you face a lot of dark sides of yourself. And it's a very healing process. And so many things come to the surface. I've noticed some things. For example, every time I travel, even if I'm in the mood for that and I've got, you know, all the energy and I'm very happy and excited to go, after 3 or 4 days, there's a discrete depression slowly sneaking in, and you don't know why, and you just feel very, very low. And it lasts for like 2-3 days, and I always tell myself you have to count 3 days whenever you feel sad, and then it goes away. I don't know, it's some sort of adjustment mechanism. And then you start to deal with this, and you can realize that whenever this sort of depression kicks in, it's moments like these when you're very vulnerable and you're very prone to doing very bad things, if you're that kind of person, you have these kind of vices, you know. It could be alcohol or drugs or anything. That was never any kind of my vice, but you can feel the vulnerability, and whatever demon you have inside of you sort of awakens. And so these little things become, you know, even larger as you travel, and then you have to find ways to not only deal with them, but actually figure them out and face them all together, so you can actually transform into something, you know, better for the long haul, not just temporarily.
But it seems in a way that you have tamed your demons. You've been in Athens now for the past 2 years. You opened a new shop. You tell us a little bit about that. And you have actually now moved to this new place. Yeah. You're making it bigger. You have your music, your recording. I mean, you know, you somehow seem that, you know, basking is a little bit in the past or not.
Well, it's not in the past. It's a part of you. This is a difficult thing to describe because I haven't figured it out myself. But things happen and things shift, and you have to accept certain things in order to evolve and not go against it. And I don't mean basking is now in the past, but whenever you create something, I always had the voice to create. It's an inner calling of sorts, and sometimes it comes in forms of music or books or anything. So I wrote some albums of music, like 7 of them, and I had so much drive to do it. It came out effortlessly. And now this voice kind of, you know, became milder for a while, and now I want to write books, and so I wrote like 7 books, 8 books, I don't know, maybe more. And I keep writing books, and that's my focus right now. I write music as well, but not as much, because I want to write about stuff that I have to say. I don't want to write just to write. And so I just follow where the voice leads me, and it comes out in different shapes and forms, and I'm okay with it. Maybe it's something else down the road, I don't know. And so now with the COVID era, I open this store, and I just want to see where it goes.
Why a LARP store? Why a store where you have games and stuff? Why is this?
And so, apart from music, another passion of mine was always fantasy. Fantasy games, fantasy books, anything fantasy. So, and that wasn't something that I stopped doing. I always did it along with music, but not in a professional basis, because storytelling is a part of my life and I really love it. And fantasy is a great, beautiful thing that, you know, the more terrible the world becomes, the better the place inside your head. And so fantasy grows along with the shadow of the world. So nowadays I spend much more time in my head than I do in reality. And I enjoy that, to be honest. I don't know if it sounds sad, but I like it. And so I wanted to create a safe haven like that for other people that feel the same way. And so I created a fantasy bookstore where people can come and read and get a nice book. I only have books that I like mostly, and play some fantasy games, some role-playing games, and the stuff I love to do, the stuff that helped me survive growing up, along with music, of course. And these two are not mutually exclusive. You can do both, and you can do them well, and you can even combine them. And so the next step for me was to maybe settle down a bit, build a nest that I can feel comfortable in, because I spend all my life in trains and backpacks, and which is beautiful, I guess. It is beautiful, but it's also very tiresome, and I need to do this as well. Maybe in a few years I'll do everything again, you know, from the beginning. I don't know. I don't feel sad about anything. I mean,
do you feel basking is misunderstood at times? That people like think of someone, of a basker, like a person who is a homeless person and trying to earn money?
Yeah,
because this is not your case, is it?
No, it's not.
Not at all.
No, it's not. It's always been misunderstood. It's always going to be misunderstood. I've gotten so much used to it, it's ridiculous now. But if you hear a musician playing beautifully on the street, and you think he's a homeless person, the same person, if you build 4 walls around them and listen to the same person playing the same music, suddenly he's, a prestigious musician. It's the same thing. Just people, it's difficult for people to think outside of frames and boxes. So basking has nothing to do with homelessness or even being a hippie, because I was never a hippie. It was always a way to play music without being employed by someone else. It's the honest way of being a freelancer, a freelance musician, and it was always a way to make money without being paid by someone in particular. Because all bands go through this hell, going after venues, requesting pay, being rejected and stuff like that. Busking does not require anything like that. You just cut the middleman, you remove him completely, and you just go directly to the source, to the people. So there's nothing, but there's nothing else, there's nothing negative about it. It is just a free form of playing music, and it should be received in a much better way.
Do you still play in the streets of Athens?
Of course. Not Athens that much, because the past 2 years I've been playing mostly in the summer, so I travel around Greece mostly.
Mm-hmm.
So I play. And sometimes when I have some days off, I just go and play for fun.
Because I remember every Wednesday you used to go down to the Ionisio Aropagitu.
Sure.
I changed. Do you still do that?
Not in Aropagitu. I just change spots all the time. I don't know. I don't like the fancy places or the common destinations of other buskers. I'd rather play in my neighborhood, whatever that is. It's the same thing, more or less. So, yeah, I may go on a weekly basis or a monthly basis now in the winter. And then, again, when the weather becomes better, I go out often. And in the summer, I go daily.
Are you chased by the Greek police?
Always. But I chase them back, no. I'm kidding. Not very much. I mean, in Greece, we don't have so much of a problem. I mean, in order to have a problem, someone else must complain and you just figure it out. There are some cases that can be a pain, but no, I've learned the spots and I've learned where to avoid. For example, Aropagitu has a lot of problems, and so does Ermou, because they're the most, you know, touristic places and stuff. But if you avoid them, you will have many problems.
Mm-hmm. Do you think then traveling is just a question of personalities, of different people perceiving traveling in different ways?
Yes, but I think it should be a necessity. I mean, whenever my friends or a friend of mine, you know, has some sort of trouble and he needs answers or advice, sometimes I don't know exactly what to tell them, but the first thing I say is just go travel and you'll figure it out, because that's the only way I know how. Whenever I don't know what to do, I know that if I start traveling for, you know, a number of weeks, the answer will come. Because it's something inside us, whenever you get out of your comfort zone, that triggers a series of mechanisms that provide answers. It's a sort of development that you need. And if you live in a routine and every day is the same, you will never get answers. That's how the panic attacks begin, and that's how the other demons begin.
Thank you, Angelos, for joining us and taking time to speak to us.
Thank you very much.
That was musician and busker artist Angelos Kyprianos. Even though busking is often misunderstood and very much related to homelessness, artists like Angelos are a fine example how such myths can be debunked, and that street artists in all performing arts can be actual gems of artistic perfection. Join us for another of our humane topics next week, where we'll be definitely roaming the infinite space of our beautiful minds in another of our infinite curious programs. I'm Katerina Badzaiki. Thank you for joining us. And more, same time, next Sunday at 11 a.m. local time.
Been blind for some time now. Been blind, I've been a fool. Been a while since I saw an angel. So sound I look like you. Cut my wings and it's over. I'd fly back to you. Don't believe that I'm sober when I'm looking for you. Yeah, I talk about angels about a year away. 'Cause I've been moving in circles, you've been flying away. And
time still finds us apart. Been given a time since time seemed like the way. Been a while and I can't remember since I saw the light of day. Call my name and it's over. I'd crawl back to you, you. Down my lead out, I'm sober. When I'm looking for you, here I took, how about angels? About a year away. 'Cause I've been moving in circles. Yeah, I've been flying away. And time still finds us above.